Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, where it's the most... Boy, this, it's dry, sunny, breezy, blue skies, no clouds. What happened? Who ordered that? It's called autumn here, I think. And I'm just, since I don't need to wear a sweater, I just thought I'd just tug at some threads. Because sometimes when you do that, the sweater unravels. Sometimes you get a whole new sweater. So we see this week, ladies and gentlemen, that there is a plot has been revealed by our friends in Washington. A plot involving, as best as I can understand it, an Iranian used car salesman who lives in Texas. I know, it sounds like the start of a joke that ends up with a rabbi and a priest and a boat or something. Anyway, is there such a joke? If so, please send it in. An Iranian used car salesman living in Texas, a Mexican drug gang, and the Iranian government's feared Quds force. And I know, as I heard it, and as I say it now, it sounds goofy, improbable, much like, let's say, the Iran-Contra plot hatched and carried out in this country. So governments are sometimes capable, even at the highest levels, of doing goofy, dopey stuff. Really? Yes. But there have been doubts, some doubts expressed, some criticism expressed of the credibility of the plot as announced so far, the lack of evidence tying said used car salesman to the thing. Okay, I don't know. It's not my business. I'm just paying my taxes. But then we see this, and it's just another thread. Now, you may know that the defense minister, the defense secretary in the British government resigned on Friday, Liam Fox. And he resigned because he'd been taking around with him on his trips to foreign defense ministries and foreign governments a pal, a guy who was his best man at his wedding. The shot that was on all the newscasts in Britain was just this, really, you get tired of any of these shots when you see them over and over and over again. But these two guys on Fox's wedding day, kind of tipsy in their morning coats, just didn't want anything to do with that. So he's been taking this guy, Adam Warity, around with him on his official trips. And Adam Warity has a business card embossed with the seal of the House of Commons saying, advisor, except he's not. Except he's just a pal. Except he's been getting money, donations, from various organizations with a business interest in, you know, the arms business, the defense business, businesses like that, good businesses, fine business, job creators. And now it comes out that some of those donors are upset that he was spending the money on first-class hotels and airfares when they thought it was going to, you know, accomplish an agenda. Like, that's why you give money to people, to accomplish an agenda. And now we learn, according to one British newspaper today, that Warity was working closely with U.S.-backed neoconservatives who thought they, together, could bring down the Iranian government. Even though such a plot would be highly ambitious, if not impossible, says the British newspaper, The Independent. So, who, you know, just another thread, just tugging at a thread. Because you might someday find a sweater at the other end. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you can hear it in me because the adrenaline just, you know, the minute I open the microphone, the adrenaline dries me right up. But otherwise, I'm still sniffling from this cold that's been going on for eons now. So I may be more interested in this than you. The subject of superbugs, antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So this caught my eye. When wastewater treatment plants discharge their treated water into rivers and lakes, they can also pass along antibiotic-resistant bacteria and their resistance genes, according to a new study. If other bacteria in the environment get these genes, municipal wastewater could contribute to the growth of antibiotic resistance worldwide, the researchers say. When examining sources of antibiotic resistance, scientists have previously focused on, as you know, on agricultural waste, because farms feed tons of antibiotics to their animals just to make them grow faster or just to get on their nerves. But antibiotic resistance can also develop in the guts of people taking antibiotics for health reasons. These resistant microbes get flushed into sewage and end up at wastewater treatment plants. Most treatment systems release some bacteria into the environment. The research team examined one plant's treated wastewater. They measured high levels of three tetracycline-resistant genes, really high levels, and detected them a mile away from the plant. One researcher says this release of resistant bacteria suggests that wastewater treatment plants in general could be significant sources of antibiotic resistance genes. The findings worry Alice Layton, a professor of biochemistry at the University of Tennessee. They have a university in Tennessee? Man, I got to reexamine my stereotypes. She points out that unlike most antibiotic resistant bacteria from ag waste, bacteria from municipal sewage already have the ability to make a home in the human gut and infect people. So that would make it even worse, you see. And that's not even counting all the antidepressant residue that's in wastewater now. They don't filter for that either. Don't be fooled. Or, you know, be fooled. It's your choice. Ladies and gentlemen, the buried lead department looks at a story published in the Washington Post this week. Again, just some weirdly different strands. On one hand, we had drone attacks attacking the Haqqani network, loosely allied with the Taliban, in Afghanistan and Pakistan. The Obama administration had new drone attacks this week. On the other hand, the Asian Times reports that the U.S. is resisting putting the Haqqani network on our terrorism list because we want to do business with them, to kind of wrap up the whole Afghanistan thing. So, you know, but that's not the buried lead. The buried lead is deep in the Washington Post story about the U.S. drone attacks on the Haqqani network. Way, way down at the bottom of the story, some Pakistani civilian officials are criticizing the drone attacks, although they do hope that this takes down the powerful military and intelligence service in Pakistan a few pegs. But the story at the very end quotes one Pakistani official, military official. Quote, "Nobody has any sense of history in this administration," unquote. Of course, the only question would be, really, this administration? Because we have had such a great sense of history ever before. Just ask. Hello, welcome to the show. Of course, you'd need a sense of history to answer that question. So.
Deusas e bofetões, entre dó e coronéis, entre parangolés e patrões, o malandro anda assim de viés, deixa balançar a maré, e a poeira senta no chão, deixa a praça virar um salão. Outra vez, caminhando na ponta dos pés, como quem pisa nos corações que rolaram dos cabarés, entre deusas e bofetões, entre dados e coronéis, entre parangolés e patrões. Malandro anda assim de viés, deixa balançar a maré, e a poeira senta no chão, deixa a praça virar um salão.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, from Spittin' Distance, from Pumps, the Corps of Engineers isn't going to replace for another while because of all their fun things that they're doing. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, follow the dollar. Well, this is, for lovers of irony, this is about as good as it gets. The, you know, Zuccotti Park is the park, formerly called Liberty Park, or Liberty Square Park in Lower Manhattan, where the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations or occupation has been centered. And it's the park that the city of New York threatened to throw them out of on Friday, so they could park could be cleaned, supposedly, at the behest of the owners of the park, which has been identified in a lot of media as a privately owned park, which is kind of true and kind of, well, anyway, the occupation, as you probably know, one of their critiques of the current thing is, in common with the Tea Party, at least to a certain extent, is the prevalence of bailouts for the richest, most powerful corporations in the country, or some of them at least, in the financial world. Well, here's the cute part. Enough of the preface. Get to the point. The New York Daily News reports that the owners of Zuccotti Park have gotten $750,000, that's not a lot, but it's something, in government handouts since 9/11. Yeah, handouts, bailouts, whatever you want to call them. Brookfield Properties has received at least three six-figure grants meant for small businesses hurt by 9/11. even though it's an $8 billion company with thousands of employees. Brookfield got the money because the state agency that doled out the cash treated one of the huge company's small affiliates as an entity unto itself, turning it into a small business. Presto changeo, bozo. Usually when the government hands out small business grants, it looks at the financial condition of the entire company, not just a single affiliate, but the Empire State Development Corporation treated affiliates as individual companies, qualifying the Brookfield affiliate as a small business. Brookfield owns and manages seven major office buildings around Lower Manhattan. It says it, insulated from the majority of the financial impact arising from 9/11 in a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission way back in 2002, but still, they got three separate state grants to restore properties near the World Trade Center and to keep jobs in New York. A business recovery grant was the first one to help maintain a strong presence among Lower Manhattan businesses recovering post 9/11. I don't know what that means. But the park, though technically private property, is required to be kept open to the public 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because the city made this a condition way back in 1968 when the original owners, U.S. Steel, do you remember when there was a company called U.S. Steel? Doesn't that sound, that sounds older than vinyl. That sounds more obsolete than, we're still using vinyl. Is there still U.S. Steel? I don't know. Is there American Can? Is there American Can Do? Anyway, U.S. Steel wanted to build more stories in an office building they were building then, because they needed offices then, because I guess they were still making steel then. Then zoning was allowed. So they got the extra floors in return for giving the public a park on private property. So, it's privately owned, but it's a public park. So I guess the handouts worked. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of nice people doing nice things. And I've decided, because I describe these machinations thusly, and one of these days I'll tell you the derivation of that particular phrase, because it's a cute one. I'm going to now start referring to the company itself as Nice Corporation. Because that's not any more misleading than the Britain's newspaper auditor may investigate circulation figures for the European edition of Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal. This following claims that those sales figures were artificially inflated by the company buying up its own papers. You see, ladies and gentlemen. I wonder if the company got around its own paywall, too, while it was at it. No indication of that here. But the Wall Street Journal Europe's publisher, Andrew Langhoff, has resigned over the operation's links to a Dutch outfit, which allegedly received payments and favorable press coverage in the Wall Street Journal Europe in return for bulk buying copies of the paper each day at reduced prices and giving them away to students. Oh, and I bet they got a tax break for giving it to students, but we don't know that. The auditor says they're having okayed this deal originally, now there may be grounds for, quote, further investigation, unquote, because there aren't enough investigations going on of the Nice Corporation. Gert Van Maal, the man at the heart of the bulk buying scheme, had bragged that he was responsible for a large part of the Wall Street Journal's overseas sales. He used to boast he was responsible for 40% of the paper's circulation. He worked for 5 years in Wall Street Journal Europe's international distribution operations before moving to circulation marketing. I know, sounds like the same outfit to me, but it's a lateral move. There he set up the Future Leadership Institute, which he claimed was responsible for up to 43% of the sales in Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Russia. His role was eliminated by Dow Jones, owned by Rupert Murdoch, earlier this year. It emerged this week that the Wall Street Journal Europe wrote favorable articles about the outfit that Maal had contracted with in return for its commercial partner buying 12,000 copies a day. That's all it took, at low prices to boost circulation. Two stories about that outfit have now since been amended to reveal that they were paying money to the Wall Street Journal of Europe. You see. But there's more Nice stuff. A leading shareholder advisory firm says most of Nice Corporation's board, including Chairman Murdoch, should be replaced because of the phone hacking scandal, which is also, of course, a police corrupting scandal in Britain. Institutional Shareholder Services said shareholders should vote against the entire 15-member board, except for two new nominees. Two of Rupert Murdoch's sons, James and Lachlan, are on the board doing Nice things. The firm said the scandal follows a pattern of failures of board oversight going as far back as 2004. It is, quote, laid bare a striking lack of stewardship and failure of independence by a board whose inability to set a strong tone at the top about unethical business practices has now resulted in enormous costs. Oh, I think they set a strong tone at the top about ethics, don't you? The consultancy also recommends voting against a pay package that gave Rupert Murdoch a bonus of $12.5 million for the past fiscal year. But he also has a piece of the back end. Nice people doing nice things, ladies and gentlemen. The Nice Corp. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Anniston, Alabama. Officials with the parent company of Olive Garden Restaurant say they're sorry if a decision regarding an Alabama Kiwanis Club's desire to display the American flag caused any concern. Well, why? How could it possibly? The comments came after 80-year-old Marty Warren of Anniston said she wasn't allowed to bring an American flag into an Olive Garden for a planned Kiwanis Club banquet. Warren learned the night of the banquet she wouldn't be allowed to display the flag or the Kiwanis banner. That ticks me off. You don't screw with the Kiwanis. I was so angry, she told a local TV station. Orlando-based parent firm of Olive Garden, Darden Restaurants. Would that be Chris Darden? No, couldn't be. Sent in a statement, like all Americans, we have nothing but the utmost respect and admiration for the American flag and everything it symbolizes. The Olive Garden in this particular location lacks a private dining area, which led to the decision, company officials said. To be fair to everyone and avoid disrupting the dining experience for all other guests, they're unable to accommodate flags or banners of any type in the dining room. Warren said she asked club members to close their eyes and picture the flag waving in the wind as they said the Pledge of Allegiance. Visualize flag. Who knew the Olive Garden was headquartered in Orlando? Speaking of Florida, the Jacksonville, Florida man accused of hacking celebrities' online accounts for nude photos and other private information says this week, I'm very sorry for all this. A federal judge ordered Christopher Cheney to appear in a California courtroom next month to answer charges. What I'm most sorry about is that I had to drag my mom into all this and my family, my neighbors, and they just want to live their lives, Cheney told reporters. He did not respond to questions. So let's go ask his mom. Oscar-winning actress Hilary Swank apologized this week for attending a birthday party for Chechen President Ramzan Kadyrov, saying she had not been aware of his reported violations of human rights. Her apology was dismissed by the Human Rights Foundation, which said it had warned Swank prior to attending the October 5 Swank birthday event in the Chechen capital of Grozny that Kadyrov had been implicated in abductions, torture, and executions. Oh, those are human rights violations? Why didn't you... I deeply regret attending this event, which has thrown into question my long and deeply held commitment to the protection of human rights. Rights, Swank said in a statement. I would never intentionally do anything that raised doubts about such commitment. I will continue to donate my time and my financial resources, not only to the charities, blah, blah, blah. Reports were, of course, that she got paid for showing up in Grozny. But, you know, who wouldn't show up? Who wouldn't insist on being paid before showing up in Grozny? Whatever the reason. Dateline Glasgow, Scotland, the Scottish dad said he was pleased to hear about a mall's change in policy after he was kicked out for taking pictures of his own daughter. Chris White said he was shocked when a security guard in the mall approached him at the Brayhead shopping center near Glasgow and told him to delete the illegal pictures he had taken of his daughter. White said he was removed from the mall and questioned by police officers, citing, any guesses? That's right, the Terrorism Act. spokesman for the mall apologized and said the policy is being revised. The owners of a Liberian flag car, they got it. You know, I'm amazed the Liberians don't have a bigger navy with all the commercial vessels that they flag. They must be good at sea. The owners of a Liberian flag cargo ship grounded and leaking oil off the coast of New Zealand's North Island apologized to people affected by the disaster, but refused to accept liability. I'm sorry, but I didn't do it. Really? About 350 tons of oil has spilled. 88 cargo containers have fallen from the 47,000-ton Rena, which ran aground on a previously unspoiled beach in New Zealand. About 500 dead birds have been recovered, more than 80 oiled birds. They're good eaten. And at least four seals were in cleaning stations. The managing director of Greek-based Costamare Shipping Company said in a statement, the Rena, the ship, was in a good condition, and the master of the ship had an exemplary record. Yes, it's Greek-based, but Liberian-flagged. Isn't globalism wild? The company was working closely with authorities to explain the ship's systems and to aid any salvage attempt, but we apologize without hesitation for what has happened, he said. Dateline Fargo, you know where that is, a South High School assistant principal, I don't know where that is, has been reprimanded and will undergo sensitivity training after calling a black student buckwheat while telling him to remove or cover a rosary he was wearing in school, according to Supervisor Rick Beresh. Assistant Principal Mike Nygaard has been given verbal and written reprimands. A letter of reprimand is being put in his permanent file. This is going in your permanent file, Nygaard. He will continue as assistant principal, however. The incident, says Beresh, involved only one young man, and Nygaard has tendered an apology for the racially insensitive remark to the youth and his parents. Apparently, since schools began banning gang-related bandanas, clothing and hairstyles, as according to Religion News Service, students have turned to using rosaries as a subtle and First Amendment-protected way to signal gang allegiance, which explains at least the policy, if not the verbiage or verbiage. Dateline Belfast, Northern Ireland, United Kingdom will not hold an inquiry into the murder of Catholic lawyer Pat Finucane in Northern Ireland in 1989, according to the Prime Minister, David Cameron, even though one of his ministers has apologized for state collusion in the killing. Finucane's widow walked out on a meeting with Cameron when she found there would not be an official review of the killing. And she said she was disgusted. Cameron said the quickest way to get to the facts would be an internal investigation or inquiry. But the British Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Owen Paterson, did apologize on behalf of the British government for the murder, which they don't know with it. This is the week for apologies, but I didn't do it then. That theme, found the theme. Dateline Jerusalem, Israel's defense minister has formally apologized to Egypt for the killing of six Egyptian police officers during a cross-border shootout with militants suspected of carrying out deadly attacks in Israel. Retail giants Walmart and Carrefour China, Carrefour, a French retail giant, have apologized for selling food that had expired in the capital of central China's Hunan province. The rice dumplings had a sell-by date 4 months later than it was supposed to be. Ugh. They're 1,000-year-old dumplings. A video clip which received nearly 160,000 views of protesters discussing whether U.S. Congressman John Lewis should leave without speaking to a crowd of more than 100 people in Atlanta on the Occupy Atlanta thing surfaced and received just as much controversy as viewership. But the group apologized to the people in the crowd who were offended for dissing or not allowing Congressman Lewis to speak during the Friday meeting. The Bermuda Football Association has apologized for playing the wrong national anthem before Bermuda's World Cup win over Trinidad. The U.S. anthem was played instead of God Save the Queen. Hey, that means we own Bermuda. The Sankei Shimbun newspaper apologized in its Monday edition for falsely reporting in July that former Chinese President Jiang Zemin had died. The Canadian embassy in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, has apologized for the recent delay in issuance of visas and the consequent negative impact on Saudi visa applicants. The embassy said it's working hard to shorten the time. It intends to further cooperate with the government of Saudi Arabia in order to achieve satisfaction when it comes to processing times as well as validity of visas in order to facilitate the movement of people between the two countries. Saudi Arabia, ladies and gentlemen, home country for 17 of the 19. 9-11, you know, hang. Amid growing public anger, U.S. military officials apologized to South Korea for cases in which two U.S. soldiers were accused of raping two teenage girls in separate incidents. The resignation of British Defense Secretary Liam Fox was accompanied by an apology from Fox for allowing his private interests and government activities to become blurred. His former boss, British Prime Minister David Cameron, also said he was sorry about the whole thing. And Boston College Athletic Director Gene DeFilippo has apologized to the presidents and athletic directors of the Atlantic Coast Conference for saying in a newspaper interview that ESPN told the league to add Pittsburgh and it's too confusing, but basically it's basically the point of that story is just that college athletics are Boston College left the Big East Conference and joined the Atlantic Coast Conference, supposedly because ESPN told them to, because it's money. Money and college athletics. Imagine that, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm sorry if even the thought of it offends you. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Standing looking through a hole in the door. It's so warm, are you still alive? You've been sitting thinking too long about to drive you mad. You can't help but love her, and you know you're not the only man. There ain't no spirits. There ain't no one that can make you whole, 'cause your woman's gone and left you alone. Love will stone you, but you'll come down. There ain't no one who will feel your sadness. There ain't no one who will ease your pain, 'cause your woman's gone and left you again.
There ain't no one that can lift your spirits. There ain't I'm Chris Wallace. Welcome to Fox News Sunday. His steady climb of the GOP presidential popularity polls has brought him equal with frontrunner Mitt Romney. Does Herman Cain have staying power, or is he another flavor of the month? He's our exclusive guest today, right now, on Fox News Sunday. And hello again from Washington. Mr. Cain is with us here in our Fox News headquarters.
Hello, Chris. Thanks for having me back. It's a 999 kind of morning, isn't it?
Well, it may be, sir. And in Fox News hindquarters in Michigan is the man Mr. Cain has recently identified as his chief economic advisor, an accountant, Mr. Rich Lowry. Good morning to you, sir.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Mr. Cain.
You see, Chris, when you start out taking your economic advice from someone whose very name is Rich, you're at the very least going in the right direction.
All right, sir. We'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, your rise to the upper ranks of the GOP presidential hopefuls has brought new scrutiny to you and your proposed tax policy.
You're referring to the 999 plan.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Critics in both parties have charged that the plan would result in a big tax increase for poor and middle-class people.
Yeah, I understand that, Chris.
Well,
but I understand something else, too. There's no such thing as poor people or middle-class people. There's just people. We didn't ask people when they called up to order pizza what class they were. Lots of times, we didn't even ask them where they lived. We are all rich people. Some of us just haven't worked hard enough to realize it yet.
Well, but you don't disagree that people with an income of $50,000 or less are going to pay more taxes under your plan.
You're talking about 999?
Yes, sir.
But you see, those projections are based on certain assumptions that we didn't use in crafting 999.
Well, such as?
Such as that person continuing to make $50,000 a year or less. But in our system, that's totally up to them. And if they choose to rise above that level, then it's not an issue for them. That's just a part of the magic of 999.
Well, let me turn for a minute to the man you've described as your senior economic advisor, mm-hmm. Mr. Lowry. Sir, you have a degree in accounting from a fairly obscure college. Is that correct?
Chris, we're talking about taxes here. When you have a problem with your taxes, and with the system everybody does eventually, do you call an economist?
Well,
I certainly hope not. You call an accountant. So that's what my friend Mr. Cain did.
And Chris, let me just say, I think everybody in Cleveland would be surprised to hear you call Western Reservist Class University obscure.
Case Western Reserve.
You know, for that matter, 999 was obscure until we came up with it.
But Mr. Lowry, isn't it still a little unusual for a major presidential campaign to rely on a financial advisor from a suburban bank branch?
Mr. Wallace, I said a couple of days ago to another interviewer that you don't need a physicist to know what happens when you drop a bowling ball.
Yes, sir. That quote got quite a lot of attention in the...
Well, I just want to demonstrate the truth of that remark for your viewers here this morning. So I took the liberty of bringing a bowling ball here to the studio.
Well, please be careful, sir. We're just renting the studio for the hour.
And I'm just going to stand up.
Mr. Lowry?
And even though you're no physicist, you know very well what's going to...
Ow! Ooh! Damn! Gosh, damn fud-rucking mama jump.
You all right, sir?
I should have worn my work boots.
Mr. Lowry.
Chris, we're getting a bit off the topic of 999 here.
We are indeed, Mr. Cain.
Could I get some ice and a towel, please?
And I just want to emphasize that we did not just pick some numbers out of a hat in crafting the 999 plan. My advisors and I examined and debated several alternative plans.
Such as?
Well, for one, the 777 plan. I think at one point we looked at the 10-10-10 plan, and because we wanted to explore even the most radical-seeming ideas, we spent a good deal of time costing out something called the 7-8-9 plan.
All right, sir, but during the last couple of Republican debates, you rejected calls to identify other economic advisors on your campaign team, which many of your opponents have characterized as strange.
Yes, I know they have, Mr. Wallace, and what I thought was strange was their devotion to continuing the current tax code, which is what's got us into this mess, which 999 could get us out of it. But I have heard these criticisms, and so I've prevailed upon one of my advisors to join me this morning.
You have indeed, and he's in our New York studio. Do you think we could
possibly persuade him to turn his chair around so he could face towards the camera?
Well, your people wouldn't agree to disguise his face or his voice.
Sir, do you want to identify yourself?
Mm-mm. Because he's a very high-ranking official in his company, and they don't want people to think that by his being facially on camera that they're endorsing me.
Well, even though, according to our information, that company has given money to your political action committee?
Chris, if they did give money, it was to our educational foundation, the 999 Foundation, which doesn't have to reveal its donors, which they may not even be. Since they don't have to reveal it, I don't even know. Or if I do, I don't have to tell you.
All right, finally, Mr. Kane.
Yes.
There is grumbling among both some of your supporters and naturally among your opponents that, as an article on the political website put it, you're not spending time and money in the key early primary states. And, in fact, you're not really a serious candidate in for the long haul.
Well,
what's your response to that criticism?
Chris, I want to say that I've heard the critics and the naysayers and the politicos and the politicons, but we've been spending our time productively and semi-transparently dealing with the scrutiny and criticisms of our tax plan. We've agreed to adjust and modify and strengthen our plan to meet those objections.
Right.
So today I'm announcing that we're adding another nine. Going forward, it's going to be the 9999 plan. The extra nine makes it extra fine. If that doesn't prove we're in for the long haul, I don't know what can. We've added another nine.
Mr. Kane, Mr. Lowry, and our unidentified advisor in New York, thank you all for coming in this morning. Be safe on the campaign trail. I'm sure we'll see you again on another Fox News Sunday.
I know you chew and spit. You tear yourself to bits. You smoke and you drink. And shop until you're half sick. Some kind of comfort, and that's the reason why you do it. It's some kind of comfort, and that's the reason why. Well, lucky you, you found your poison, your reason for hating who you are, what you do. You can stop completely. It's easy. It's all those days when you're feeling blue. But you need to chew and spit. You'd eat the world if you were offered it. 'Cause something hurts inside. Makes you feel as empty as an Oklahoma sky. And every day you feel the blame of, the shame of living with excuses and lies. Longing for that moment of oneness, the numbness just before you ask yourself why. You have to chew and spit, then tear yourself to bits. Smoke and you drink. Whatever stops you thinking, 'cause it's some kind of comfort, and that's the reason why you do it. It's some kind of comfort, and that's the reason why you do it. It's some kind of comfort, and that's the reason why.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now...
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
News of our friend the Atom. Addie?
This is beautiful weather. I could split. Ladies and gentlemen.
I think that means he's happy.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Because, you know, split means, you know,
I know. I'm no hipster. I'm an atom.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, roughly 5,000 square miles of Japanese territory would be covered by a national program to remove radioactive material released by the Fuk atomic facility, according to a Japanese newspaper this week. That would be like 5,000 square miles. Under a benchmark announced Monday by the Japanese Environment Ministry, the government would conduct or sponsor contaminant removal for areas in which yearly radioactivity surpasses 1 millisievert, roughly 5,000 square miles. Around 3% of Japan's territory meets the criterion as of this particular moment in time. And that's, I think, exciting for all of us. They've contaminated roughly 3% of the territory, and it's just starting. It's just, they've just taken the seal off this one. So who knows? They might have to all go to Korea. Four generators that power emergency systems in U.S. nuclear plants have failed when needed since April this year. An unusual cluster. Huh. That has attracted the attention of federal inspectors. Huh. And could prompt the industry to re-examine its maintenance plans. Huh. None of these failures has threatened the public, of course. But the diesel generators serve the crucial function of supplying electricity to cooling systems that prevent a nuclear plant's hot radioactive fuel from overheating, melting, and potentially... That worst-case scenario, or sound effect, did happen, of course, at Fuk. Three diesel generators failed after tornadoes ripped across Alabama and knocked out electric lines serving the Browns Ferry nuclear plant in April. Tornadoes in Alabama? Who's ever heard of that? That could never possibly... Two failed because of mechanical problems. Well, that could happen to... And one was unavailable because of planned maintenance. Another generator failed at the North Anna plant in Virginia following the August earthquake. Generators have not worked when needed in at least a dozen other instances since 1997 because of mechanical failures or because they were offline for maintenance. To me, it's not an alarming thing, says Michael Golay, a professor at MIT who studies risk at nuclear plants. But if this trend were to continue, he continues, you'd certainly want to look into it. All right, then. Go subjective on me, babe. At a minimum, the failures have prompted NRC inspectors to increase their scrutiny of plants where the problems happened. Well, I would like to do that. Beyond that, industry officials and academics say the incidents could lead the NRC to formally warn nuclear plant operators about the recent failures. Ooh, that would be frightening. And prompt utilities to reevaluate what can disable a generator. Some think these experiences may factor into upcoming rules the NRC will issue in response to the crisis in Japan. Even at low odds, which is the case for any of this stuff, a generator failure can turn serious when combined with other problems, notably human error. Thank God we don't have that to worry about. We got rid of that, 1959? In the U.S., an average of roughly one diesel generator has failed when needed each year since 1997. The odds are that a diesel generator would fail to work at some point during an 8-hour shift were roughly slightly greater than 2 or 3%. Sure, do the math, like Harmon says. Dateline Tokyo, Japan should be less conservative in cleaning up vast areas contaminated by radiation, says a team of visiting UN nuclear experts. Removing layers of topsoil from areas contaminated by radiation is one of the methods being considered by Japan, but the IAEA team says it would be impractical. We want the government to avoid becoming over-conservative. That area, roughly the size of Luxembourg, by the way, would involve scraping off surface soil, about 29 million cubic meters, therefore, of radioactive waste that would then need to be disposed of. And finding a final storage place for the debris is seen as a major headache for the government. Oh, I think an Indian tribe here could be convinced to, sure, build a casino on it. Win-win. Win-win-win. 9999. 7 months after much of the northeast coast of Japan was destroyed by the tsunami and then the thing, Japan is attempting to revive tourism by offering free round-trip flights. Won't you, ladies and gentlemen? And don't forget to take your Geiger counter with you. Japanese doctors have begun checking the thyroids of 360,000 children in Fukushima Prefecture state, site of that thing. The examinations on a scale medical officials are calling unprecedented comes amid concern that the cancer rate in the area could surge. Children from the two towns closest to the plant were among the first to undergo ultrasonic thyroid examinations at the Fukushima Medical University. One of my favorites, as medical universities go. The power plant was severely, you know that. Dr. Shinichi Suzuki of the university's medical school says it will take several years to carry out preliminary examinations of those 18 and under. And he says it can take a long time for any irregularities in the thyroid to manifest as cancer. That was seen 4 or 5 years after Chernobyl. He says some experts contend a longer period of vigilance will be needed in Japan. But now to Hanford, Washington, where the program that helps maintain safety of material that accounts for one-third of the radioactivity of the Hanford nuclear waste resulting from our long-term weapon-building program there, it needs improvement, that safety maintenance program does, according to the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board. Did you even know we had such a thing? Sure we do. Its staff raised concerns after a review of the maintenance program at the Waste Encapsulation and Storage Facility, the WESF. The Department of Energy has 60 days to respond. WESF stores 1,335 containers filled with cesium and 601 containers of strontium. They generate substantial heat. The elements were removed from Hanford's 177 underground tanks holding high-level radioactive waste years ago. The cesium and strontium capsules, which cast an eerie blue glow when the lights are turned off, are stored in a pool underwater to shield workers from radiation. But that large quantity makes it imperative that all structure systems and components serving a safety function be rigorously maintained and monitored, says Defense Board Chairman Peter Winokur. That requires a high degree of formality of maintenance operations and clear expectations from management, the letter said. In addition, all workers need to receive training specific to individual systems that help maintain safety, it said, suggesting that right now they're not. Oh, specific training. Oh, I see. I thought you meant... A former advisor to the Japanese cabinet has revealed the government has known for months that thousands of evacuees from around Fukushima will not be able to return to their homes. Nearly 80,000 people are still living in shelters or temporary housing. Really, what's wrong with them? Why don't they pull themselves up by their booties? Former special advisor to Japan's prime minister and cabinet, Kenichi Matsumoto, says the government has known for months that many who live close to Fuk will not be able to return to their homes for 10 to 20 years because of the contamination.
Home is where you make it.
All right, then. Thank you, Addie. Our friend Addie, the Atom. News of the Atom. It is, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And we have, I think, one more apology. No, that was the one that confused me. All right. We have no more apologies. The apologies of the week are done. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.4195 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast through KCRW.com. And it'd be just like buying a bunch of Wall Street journals at very low cost to give them to students if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to the ever more famous Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM. The email address and the playlist of the music heard here on available at harryshearer.com. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness. We got better stuff to do.
All right. I guess you're right. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. It is a community, ladies and gentlemen, as you well know, recognized around the world as, say it with me now, the home of the homeless.